He was just basking in the glow of the on target that I just went and recorded in a few minutes. So,
Did you seriously just record one while we were while we got off that other call?
Yeah.
Wow. Damn, Gina.
Grab the phone, go out, knock it out, move on.
Man, I wish I could do that. I wish I was insightful enough and clever enough to do that, but I'm not.
I am neither, but I am arrogant enough. Mm. Thanks everyone for joining another Direct Connect. Today we're going to talk a little bit about gap analysis, mock audit, and interviews. Oh my. And joined with me today are Brent Castaneda, Leonard Chamberlain. Gents, how you doing?
Excellent. Excellent.
Good afternoon.
So let's just jump right in. What is the difference in your own opinion? How do you define gap analysis, mock audit, and interview prep?
You know, when you look at a gap analysis, it's, you know, I think it's the, hey, I have a baseline understanding of my program. I'm in good shape. I just need some basic, you know, I've got some new subject matter experts that need a better understanding of their specific area of expertise. And I really want to test that knowledge, skill, and insight from their perspective. And so a gap analysis is kind of a way to better understand that your SME's knowledge, test that knowledge, and evaluate specific targeted parts of your program.
I would say the mock audit is yes, and it's that gap analysis piece, but not so much focusing so much on the gaps as it is providing a more holistic, all-encompassing mock, if you will, audit experience. So as part of that, yeah, you're going to look at evidence and call out where gaps may exist. But again, the idea is to go through the process. You know, as Brent was saying, a lot of times that's to bring new people up to speed that have never been through an audit. You know, we always like to say too, you're going to play like you practice. So practice hard. Your mock audit's your time to practice for the Super Bowl, for the real audit, for the real thing. So yeah, that's going to be ensuring your evidence is ready and mock interviews and data requests. And if you do your job right, going to feel a lot like the real thing and hopefully be a little bit more difficult, maybe, depending on your region.
I think there's a level of formality that comes, and we all think about this. When I think of a gap, I think of it as a less formal, gap analysis rather, I think of it as a less formal engagement where you're just testing specific targeted areas, where a mock audit has the formal cadence and rhythm and routine of a true audit scenario, where you're going to be able to put your people through those paces and really soup to nuts from start to finish, from NERC RFIs or data requests, however they need to respond to those, to shoring up and making sure that your teams are answering the right questions with the correct responses in the correct way. And that you're practicing, as Leonard mentioned, practicing like we play, in the sense that we're able to respond to those data requests in a meaningful, quick time frames with short turnarounds. It's a more formal version and a holistic version of a gap, I would say. So
I always kind of look at it where it's the gap. I'm usually focused more on the process, procedures, the control side of things, if you will. The mock audit, I want to steal a quote from Brian. We're going to Missouri. It's the show me state. Show me you actually did it. You know what you're doing, and you can get the same evidentiary output as you expected. That's kind of, to me, the key differentiator. And then kind of to the point I think both of you made of kind of leveling it up a little bit in that intensity and also the formality around it. About interview preps, a lot of times that's kind of built into the other two, but sometimes there's value in just doing that separately. When you do just a player pure interview prep, what does that look like?
So for me, you know, witness preparation is really, really key. And I think a crucial part of the engagement. And I think it's often overlooked. People think, oh, we're going to test our processes. Let's go through and see how well we do. And we feel confident in our responses because it's written down on paper. But witness preparation, the true fact of it is really focused on making sure you've got the right people in the right seats, responding to the questions. We've seen so many times, whether, you know, it was our experience as auditors or now as, you know, former auditors, we've seen a lot of people that struggle in the witness chair. They get there and they freeze up, they tense up. It's too formal of a setting for them. witness preparation gives them the opportunity to practice those skills and develop some of those skills if they don't have them. You know, coming from an IT background, whether you're a network engineer or system engineer, talking to people may not be your strong suit. And so witness preparation allows you the ability, yes, just like we've done in the past, the hands go up like Ricky Bobby when we don't know what to do with them, right? There are times when witness preparation allows those people to practice those skills in a non-confrontational manner and to get feedback in real time on those, on their abilities or lack thereof. There are some times where we've done witness preparation, we say, you probably don't want this person talking to the audit. We consider those back office or back of the house type folks, and they're great at gathering evidence, data collection, but they may not be who, your primary person that you want on the stand, if you will, or in an interview during an audit engagement.
You said non-confrontational. Not so sure about that piece.
I try to keep it non-confrontational in a witness preparation situation and mirror the people. You know, help them out and say, you're doing this and you probably don't want to do this. Let's put those hands in our lap. We're on the table themselves. So
I've seen some value in kind of pushing the confrontational bit to make somebody a little uncomfortable, especially if they're, we'll say, overconfident. Kind of challenge them a little bit, see how they respond to that, because you never know what auditor they're going to get.
Very true. Very true. I would agree that, you know, the interview prep, again, it should be baked into the mock audit. But every now and then there is a request to do, you know, kind of cold interview prep and just focus on that. Maybe, you know, if it's the week or 2 weeks before your audit, kind of a refresher, if you will, of good interview techniques, knowing what to say and saying just enough to answer the question and then stop talking. Don't answer unanswered questions, you know, things of that nature. No, it's certainly beneficial to go that route as well. Really demonstrate which SMEs are ready to take the lead. A lot of times what we've seen is that very clearly demonstrates, you know, no one is ready to take the lead and so they're all waiting for someone else, or the handoffs aren't really well practiced, and ensuring that all those things are ready and leads to a much better interview outcome, in my opinion.
When I think about all these things we talked about, whether it's GAP or a mock audit or witness preparation, you think about it in the entirety of that context. It's really an opportunity for your people to be tested, right? For you as an organization to evaluate your staff and see, just as Leonard was mentioning, do we have the right group of people here answering these questions? Do we have a smooth transition from you know, SIP 7R3 to SIP 7R5, as an example, right? What does that look like when the auditors pivot? And are our people ready to pivot with them to respond to those questions? Because you never know what you're going to get in an audit scenario. There's some really odd questions that occasionally come up. And if your people aren't prepped and they're just working from some semblance of a script that you've put together for them, your mileage may vary by region, but you're probably going to struggle a little bit. And exuding that confidence in your responses to the audit cores is so critical. You know, the auditors will, you know, part of what they do is visual validation and inspection. And that visual validation is of your people. You know, they want to monitor your people and feel confident, right? Have reasonable assurance that your people know what they're doing and they're doing what they say they're doing.
Yeah, I think one of the other pieces that I've seen both of you do it very well is have that take a break right in the middle of the line of questioning and say, you said this, so now I'm going to ask you all of these other questions I wasn't going to ask. Or you said this when we were talking in a SIP 7 interview. Now I have a whole bunch of SIP 10 questions because you answered it that way. I think that's a very helpful thing to your average SME. They know their lane. They know what they're doing. They're not even thinking when they're in a SIP 7 interview, they're going to get asked questions that could come back and haunt them somewhere else in the standards. I think we've seen that, honestly, I think across the entire set of NERC standards. I mean, anytime anything you say can, it will be used against you kind of approach. And I think that's important to get across to people.
Yeah. I mean, if you're as a SME, you know, being interviewed, if you're going to volunteer, you know, a ton of information I didn't ask for, I owe it to you to pay it forward and use that information in a totally separate interview.
So, that's a nice way to put it, Leonard. Pay it forward. It's a very sweet, succinct way to describe what you're doing there.
Yes.
There's a lot of questions that just come up in all of these audits every time that. They're ones I always call them building questions because they sound kind of innocuous. Two or three or four of them down the line, you realize, uh-oh, what did I just commit to? I know the guy we used to work at with at WEC that he used to do that with data requests, and it was almost, it's kind of like watching the snake with the little rabbit in the cage. You just see him slowly circling.
It's a trap.
The rabbit has no idea what's going on, but I think that's one of the best things with the interview prep is kind of to help people realize, hey, there is danger in some of these questions. If you're not careful, it may seem innocuous. So switching gears over to the kind of the how do we put this to work side, when would you recommend someone use a gap analysis rather than a mock audit?
A gap analysis, I think you want to test a variety. And again, if you've got a strong program, if you have strong internal controls, I would start looking at where my weakest points are, where my potential points of failure are, and start testing those. And my cadence, if I were a compliance manager, would be an annual basis where I think there are problem areas. I would use a gap analysis from an independent third party, right? Or some internal work, but often the best bang for your buck comes from an independent third party to do that evaluation for me. That's my take on it. I think I'm going to test that every year.
Yeah, I like the idea of doing it that often. Certainly waiting till right before your audit to do it is not the best time. The ship has already sailed as far as making any changes. So certainly doing it in advance of your audit window would be recommended.
I always look at this kind of two times that I would recommend a gap analysis. And one of them is when you have process procedures that are newer, that haven't been kind of battle tested yet. We've been brought in to do gap analysis for other third parties that have helped out. Just say, hey, these guys, this team helped us build this. I want you to come and confirm it because we're over our ski tips on this. We know enough to know kind of the basics. This is beyond that. We want to test that. The other one is when you think everything's going pretty well and you just want to kind of keep everything lubricated, if you will, everything moving. It's a good tool to use without diving super deep and check it in. I think probably the best steady state that I've seen in one of the programs was one of the utilities we used to work with out in New England. And it was come out of the audit the next year, do a gap analysis to kind of figure out where our heat spots, kind of that 30,000 foot view over fly over the forest. And then the year after that was the mock audit where we deep dive into those areas where we saw those problems in the gap. And then the year after that was the actual audit. So it was kind of that cyclic. You can just take it to the bank as far as budgetary. You could set this is how much we're going to spend. And just run it out with a 5% increase for inflation just for budgetary purposes in perpetuity and give you a good run with things. Kind of flipping it the other direction, when would you recommend a mock audit rather than a gap analysis?
Well, there's an argument here that, again, the mock audit should be done in advance of your audit window as well. Waiting until after you've received your audit notification letter to schedule your mock audit. Again, there's no time to make any improvements to your program, to your evidence at that point. Certainly, you still get the benefit of getting prepped for the actual audit, but the full benefit of the mock audit, again, in advance of receiving your audit notification letter.
Yeah, I think anything inside of 6 months before you get that, before your notice of audit comes to you is just too late at that point. So, between 12 and 6 months before the audit engagement, or if you've had a lot of turnover, we've seen a lot of organizations recently struggling with turnover, whether it's on the SIP or O&P side. You've got a lot of new subject matter experts that may have some ideas of what they do it and how to do it, but they may not be great at it just yet. A mock audit is a great way to tease out and test some of those SMEs and your program policies, procedures.
I think mock audits are a great opportunity to steal a quote from Darren Nielsen to help people get some religion as well. Like you were saying, Brent, if they're new and they're not sure, it's just another thing I have to do, not a big deal. You put them through a good mock audit. I've seen a few folks who've come from other compliance regimes where things are enforced differently in different compliance regimes. I think we've seen that, whether it's the TSA space for oil and gas, some of the water stuff, even dam safety under FERC is enforced very different from the NERC standards. So somebody might come in and they're used to kind of more of the gentlemanly approach of, we're all going to agree to the Marcus Queensberry rules. And they go into a SIP audit and they get an auditor from one of the regions who maybe is new. It can be a rude awakening. I think of one a couple of years ago where I was starting to get worried I was going to get kicked out of the building during a mock audit because there was somebody who had come from the NRC side. And the audit approach I was taking, which was directly informed by questions I'd heard from their regional auditors less than 3 months before, he took offense to. So I think that was a good opportunity then for his manager to say, no, this is how this works. Welcome to the Thunderdome of NERC-SIP or of NERC-Land. So I think that was a good opportunity. Now, part of the reason I actually talked to her earlier and said, hey, kind of did the pre-mock audit approach. How hard do you want me to push? And she said, make it hurt. Okay. I think that's a key piece when you're putting together a mock audit to know your people and know where and how to push and make sure your mock auditors are really delivering on that. And you go all the way from the Ewok approach that some of us take to the Dark Lord of the SIP. It's been a while since I've been on a mock audit with Leonard where I was worried about getting food poisoning, but we've been on a couple of those before. But I guarantee that utility came out of it ready for any audit they were going to face. I know they did well their next audit because they kind of, to Leonard's earlier point, practice like they played. Darwin, what, we talked a little bit about it, but when would you recommend somebody bring in for interview prep? When do you schedule that? Is there a good time? Is there a bad time? Besides Christmas Eve, maybe not the best time. But
yeah, I'd say any time in, you know, between December 15th and, you know, January 4th is probably not ideal. But anytime outside of that, when you sense that there may be challenges or issues, when you've, as I mentioned earlier, when I've, you know, rotated staff and I have new folks, when as a compliance manager, I'm not feeling very confident in what we have as subject matter expertise from that perspective. If I've enacted new policies, programs, perspectives, or programs, policies, and processes, or the last one I can think of is if we've had issues in the past, right? We've struggled answering questions related to SIP 4 or SIP 10. If those have been challenging issues, we need to shore that up. And our responses are not, you know, as an auditor, you know, if we submitted 9 data requests on SIP 4, that's probably something I want to look at because we didn't give the right answers. They didn't find reasonable assurance in a reasonable time frame, and so we need to kind of increase our understanding and knowledge of our program so that we're responding to the appropriate questions. Because often the auditors, if they can't get an answer out of a subject matter expert, they'll just fire off an RFI and say, go answer it here. And that takes a lot of time, effort, energy for all your SMEs and your compliance team and anyone who's QAing, QCing those documents that are going back to the region. So, you know, your question, when should you do it? Anytime, all the time, all, you know, you want to be audit ready at any given moment. So you could use witness preparation at any time.
Excellent point, Brent. I was going to say, you know, right before the audit's not a bad time, but yeah, any time is a good time. Certainly a refresher, you know, right before game time is not a bad idea. But to your point, yeah, I mean, the interviews, a lot of times, you know, I hear a lot of clients try to understand where an auditor is going with their line of questioning. And while that isn't a terrible thing to try to decode, you know, thinking about it's not necessarily chess. It is and it isn't, right? But thinking 2 or 3 questions down the road and trying to answer that question instead of the one that's in front of you, you know, again, the level of experience of the auditors varies widely. And so answering unasked questions, certainly don't recommend that. Answer the question as plainly as you can that's before you. And those other questions, well, see what happens.
Yeah. I think back to when I had, actually, Brent, I think you and Brian did the interview prep for one of my SMEs back when I was at the utility. And he was really pushing back. I don't need to go to this. I know what I'm doing, Nick. Leave me alone. He sat through it. And he was frustrated with me for about 2 weeks. And we sat down in the audit. And I remember the WEC auditor starting asking questions. And I remember on question 3, he just looks at me and starts grinning ear to ear because he realized he knew the answer to every question because he had been asked every question. And it was SIP 2, so it's kind of scripted one, but it really went down to the point where he went from this is a waste of time to, oh my God, this was how audits could be. It's just super easy. I think that was very valuable. I think one of the other pieces that I don't think I've seen anyone do it nearly as well as you do, but just the awkward pause, the pregnant pause, and just leave it there and wait and see. I have seen that a few times where it's a thing of beauty to just sit there silently and stare and wait for people to start opening up and then remind them they weren't asked a question. You don't need to speak.
That's the key to it, Nick. It's not just the silence. It's the silence plus the stare.
The Dark Lord
type furiously and stare more.
Yep. I think those are some of those lessons learned that you can't replicate though without actually going through the exercise. And I think kind of going back to the when is it appropriate, pretty much every time except for the winter break, maybe.
Yeah.
Probably not 4th of July. We'll stay away from that one. Holiday weekends in general.
I love the quote when we talk about this stuff. There's a quote Stephen Covey has that most people don't listen with the intent to understand. They listen with the intent to reply. And that's what? Is that not a good quote?
No, it's just driving your point home there.
Oh, thank you. Sorry. I didn't even catch that. That's how ignorant I am. But the reality is, I think most people do. They're thinking, I got this. I got the response to this. Instead of listening to what is the intent of the question? What's the meaning behind this? And how do I best respond to this question? Instead, they're focused, like Leonard mentioned, 3-4 questions down the line. So
I guess kind of to bring this one back home, kind of the wrap it up a little bit, if you will. What would you consider when deciding to go forward with a gap analysis, mock audit, or just interview prep? What are some of the considerations that security, compliance, engineering, reliability, that leader should be looking for?
I think it's all the things we've already talked about, right? It's the stuff we've already mentioned. It's the opportunities to, all of us are looking for areas to improve, ways we can improve, ways we can enhance our SME's knowledge to put the best foot out in front of the auditors. But not only that, when you have a good program and you have a solid program, you want to be able to communicate that in a meaningful way. And so any one of these scenarios, whether that's a gap, witness prep, mock audit, they're going to help you improve. And so I look at it as, you mentioned front end budget, right? The cycle that you want to kind of establish. That's a great way to kind of build that out. And you have a consistent cycle and people get into a rhythm of understanding, okay, we do witness prep here. We go do our mock audit and we do a gap analysis, whatever cadence that looks like. You're on a 3 or 6 year cycle, depending on your registration. You could accomplish a lot within that time frame to really help your folks feel confident in their responses they're giving during an audit engagement. And it helps boost and bolster your program.
Like we talked about, it varies depending on how new your staff is, whether they've been through an audit before, whether you've got your audit letter or not, and whether you have new program documentation. Each of those has a different level of risk, audit risk, depending on where you're at. One or more of those service offerings could really help your organization improve and be ready to perform well at audit.
And I think the last piece I would go with there is just, what are you trying to accomplish here? I look at you don't know what you don't know, you probably need a mock audit, full meal deal there. You got a pretty good idea where you've got some pain points. Maybe that's a gap analysis piece. You have some very specific targeted areas. That's probably interview time then. You really start to get surgical with it. I think that's a good way to look at that when you're going through those pieces. But at the end of the day, if you're not sure, ask. I mean, we're not going to try to push something that we wouldn't recommend to anybody else. So I'd say reach out and ask. And also ask your peers. Reach out and say, hey, what did you do at this point? People love to help. So with that, any closing thoughts on gap analysis, mock audits, interview preps, lions, tigers, and bears, oh my?
Just do it. Just do it. Pick something, right? If you're not doing any one of those, right, do one of them at the very least.
Now we're going to get a cease and desist from Nike. Thanks, Brent.
No, sorry.
What do you say next? Bo knows? Is that where we're
just
going next?
Just do it now.
There we go.
Says the guy quoting the Wizard of Oz repeatedly throughout the call.
I'm immune to that.
Hang on.
I got nothing. I'm good. I'm out.
We've managed to make the Dark Lord of Sip speechless. So with that, I think it's time to wrap it up. So thanks for joining. See y'all later.
Not only is Direct Connect available to listen to, you can also watch each episode on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@ArcherU. If you're interested in who we are and what we do, you can head on over to our website at archerint.com. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Archer International on Facebook, Archer Energy Solutions LLC on LinkedIn, and @ArcherSEC on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and check back every other week for brand new episodes of Direct Connect.